You're listening to the EWN Podcast Network.
Welcome to Raising a Powerful Girl, a community and education platform that empowers parents and caretakers to foster independence, leadership, and strong personal identity in girls so they can change the world. Now, here is the founder and your host, Maria Fuller.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Raising a Powerful Girl. I'm the founder and your host, Maria Fuller. Before we get started, let's make sure you know where to find me. You can find more information about our education and community platform at raisingapowerfulgirl.com. And you can find us on Facebook and Instagram at Raising a Powerful Girl. Make sure to connect with us on social media to find out our latest news, learn tips and tricks, submit your questions, and continue our enlightening conversations. And now let's get on with today's show. Raising teen girls is not always easy, but learning how to respond and react in a manner that keeps the lines of communication open are critical. Join us as we discuss some of the common challenges mom face when raising girls today. My guest today is Erin Taylor. Erin is a conscious living thought leader, PCI certified parent coach and educator, public speaker, author, co-founder of Building Connected Communities, and co-host of the Maximizing Life in the Middle podcast that she does with her husband. She holds a Master of Arts in Counseling Psychology and is the author of Connection and Kindness, The Keys to Changing the World Through Parenting. And her writings have been featured in a USA Today best-selling book, South Jersey Mom, and Natural Awakenings magazine. Erin was able to take the tragedy of the death of her infant daughter and turn it around, using her hard-earned wisdom to help people from all walks of life step into their power and live their best lives. Well, welcome, Erin. It's so nice to have you here today, and I'm really excited about our conversation because we've connected a couple of times in the past, and I really love your philosophy on raising girls. Can you tell our audience a little bit about you and your journey so far?
Sure. Thank you, Maria. It is a pleasure to be here with you. I worked for 20 years as a therapist with foster, biological, and adoptive families. And several years ago, I switched over to become a parent coach. So now, instead of working with the entire family, I really just work with the parents because I found that the most effective work I could do in my other capacity was the time spent with the parents. And so now I really, that's my main focus. I am also a mom of four kids, and my oldest daughter died of a heart defect when she was a baby. And so I feel like I really understand deeply how precious parenting, what a precious responsibility parenting is, and at the same time, how stressful it can be.
Yeah, and I'm sorry to hear about your loss with your daughter. And I love that your original journey started with, you know, foster families and adoptive families, which are not, you know, what we traditionally think of when we think of family. And it aligns a lot with, you know, my past history. My parents were foster parents for many years, and I was much older when they became foster parents. But it was really interesting to see the journey that my parents went through with raising other children and, you know, the dynamic behind that. And I love that you are on the same page with me that so much of the work, and when I talk about raising powerful girls, so much of the work that we need to do starts with mom and dad, or mom and mom, or whoever it is that are raising our girls today, that's where we can have the largest impact. What do you find are some of the largest challenges that you are seeing these days or are working with parents with these days?
I think specifically to moms, this is what jumps out at me when you ask that question. Moms are so hard on themselves. They beat themselves up. They have completely, wildly unrealistic expectations of themselves that no superhuman could even achieve. And then when they don't achieve it, they're so mercilessly hard on themselves. And if we as moms are treating ourselves like that, how are we modeling for our girls? Wow.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, I think one of the biggest problems is that society has painted this picture of what motherhood is supposed to look like from commercials that we see or these storylines that are being played in television. And what I love right now is with this huge shift that's going on, I think, in our entire world, a lot of it coming from Hollywood, which is actually really amazing. We're starting to see a push for more women creating stories written by women. And we need their voices to be heard more, because I know for myself, when I became a mom, one of the hardest things for me was that I grew up with this idea of what I thought motherhood was supposed to look like. And then, you know, I had a very difficult pregnancy and a very prolonged delivery with my first. And when I had my daughter and they placed her in my arms, I remember thinking like this magical moment was supposed to happen where like the heavens parted and yeah. the angels started singing and it was like, oh, and the reality was, is that I had a 54-hour labor and I had, you know, some major tearing going on, and they gave me the baby. And I remember looking at her going, I have no idea who you are. And mm-hmm. I'm exhausted and I am terrified. Mm-hmm. And I really need someone to just hold you right now because I'm in pain. And I remember feeling awful for so many years that was my first initial response to motherhood. And the reality is it's a very common and normal response. And we need to start having these conversations and telling the truth behind what motherhood really looks like to make it easier for other moms and for other girls. Absolutely. As well. And, you know, you yourself being a mom to a daughter and to sons, how old is your daughter, I guess?
She's 12.
So you're in that starting to see kind of like that shift and that dynamic happening. What are the differences you see right now with your relationship between yourself and your daughter and your sons?
That's a great question. My daughter is a lot like me in many ways. And so she and I have an easy time relating to each other. I understand how she thinks. So when we're talking, I will sometimes predict what her question or her response will be. And she'll just be amazed. How did you know that? I just understand how you think. So our relationship is actually not that challenging. It's pretty effortless and pretty relaxed and comfortable, and we're very close. And I would say I am with my boys too. But there's that added challenge as a mom to try to really get into the headspace of a boy, which is not where I live. So, you know, there's that added, I almost look at it like a puzzle or a mystery to be solved, where I don't feel like I have that with her. I mean, I guess if she was vastly different from me as a young girl, then I might feel that mystery with her as well. But she's the same gender as me, and we're very similar in a lot of ways. So it's just easy. There's not a lot of mystery there.
That's awesome. And that's my youngest is like that with me. We really click very easily, and our brains kind of work similarly. And my oldest is just like my husband. And so that's where I think, friction comes from sometimes, because she thinks so differently, but at the same time is some of the similarities that come across can be challenging in terms of butting heads. With your daughter, I'm sure with everything that's going on in society today and the pressure for girls to be perfect or act a certain way, and you being someone that is very conscious in your parenting and making sure that I'm sure that she's being gentle on herself, and this whole concept we're talking about moms being too hard. What are some of the things that you do at home to model that behavior for her?
Well, I guess because I've worked so many years with parents and moms. The majority of my work has been with moms, I would say. I guess because I'm, you know, it's kind of at the front of my mind, this important need for moms to be kind to themselves first. My mom used to tell me when I was little, you have to love yourself first before you can love anyone else. And you have to love yourself first before anyone else can love you. So this was a deeply ingrained belief that was given to me, fortunately, as a child. So I knew how important it was that I look out for me, take care of me, honor me. And so I have, you know, that just is a lifelong practice that I have always worked with. And if I make a mistake or mess up or use bad judgment or make the wrong decision or, you know, whatever it happens to be, I am very kind to myself. I'm very careful to monitor my own internal dialogue. And I don't allow any thoughts of, how could you be so stupid? What were you thinking? Oh my goodness, you've screwed everything up now. You know, all these kind of, I've heard so many moms tell me these horrific bullying statements they make to themselves, and it does no one any good. And so I try to model that at home for all of my kids, but particularly for my daughter, because everybody makes mistakes. Everyone uses poor judgment. Everyone doesn't make the best decision from time to time. And it's just part of being human. And so there's no reason for us to beat ourselves up. There's no reason for us to come down hard on our kids when they mess up. We're all just doing the best we can. And so I try to model that with her to myself and then remind her that it's important for her to do it for herself too. You mess up? Oh, well, you mess up. Let's look at how we can not mess up that way the next time. It's just that simple.
Yeah.
And also that difficult.
Yeah, it really is. I think for me, a big shift that I tried to make in the last few years is to start externally verbalizing a lot of what's going on in my head when I'm thinking, when I'm going through something, because I feel like we make decisions sometimes as parents or see situations and we are processing through our head and we know why we're making decisions, but our children don't understand it. And my oldest is someone that really, she's a rule follower and she really likes to know the rules based off of things. And if you do something once one way, then she creates a rule in her head. So then if you do it differently another time for a reason, to her, you're breaking the rule and then she gets frustrated. Mm-hmm. So I've started externally, like I'm constantly talking out loud on like what I'm going through. And I'll say, oh, I made a really bad choice here. I shouldn't have done that. Maybe next time I'll do this or that differently. And something that's been a big hit in our house is I've been really horrible about self-care for years for myself. I'm definitely one of those people that have always pushed, mm-hmm. pushed, was labeled the super mom, which I hate because I'm not. But I didn't take time for myself and it took a toll on you know, my health mentally and physically. And I didn't want that for my girls. And so a lot of what we do now is we'll talk about, you know, how we're feeling and what we're going to do to self-care for ourselves. Mm-hmm. And creating those self-care routines and habits, which have been really strong and powerful because it's not something that I remember growing up seeing, so it's not something I ever did, mm-hmm. Which I found to be interesting. Have you noticed, and it sounds like you were brought up with a really positive, amazing mom that was very empowering. Have you noticed there are things that happened in your life that were patterns of behavior that you started doing with parenting that you decided, well, why am I doing this way, or how should I shift maybe to make a better choice?
I think parenting is a constant shifting, a constant evolution, a constant growing. I think the best, I don't want to say the best parenting, the best approach to parenting, that's what I was looking for, is just a continuous reassessment. Minute by minute, hour by hour, day by day, week, month, year, whatever, a continuous short, medium, and long-term focus on what you're doing, how you're doing it, how you're relating to your kids, how they're looking, or, you know, how they seem, and how you're approaching them, and if you need to shift anything or tweak anything. I think it's constant. And what I find is that my adjustments, because I am constantly making, I kind of look at it like driving. You know how when you drive down the street, you don't just put the steering wheel in one position and then set it and forget it, or else you'll be veered off into the woods. You have to like shift a hair to the right, a hair to the left. Maybe you have to go more to the right, then the road bends and you have to bend with it, and then you straighten out. And so you're making microscopic adjustments and then major ones when you have to make a turn. And so I think that's how parenting is. The more micro adjustments you make, the less dramatic your changes will end up having to be.
I love that. That's such a great example. And it varies also, I think, per child, right? Mm-hmm. My husband is really funny because he's very structured, like my oldest, more of a rule follower even than her. And I remember him saying things, our girls are 5.5 years apart, saying, you know, we didn't do this with Alexa. Like, why are we doing this with Aria now? And I said, well, she's a different child. She behaves and responds differently. We've learned better. We've learned differently. And that's okay that we do things differently with one child than we would do with another. You know, one responds, you know, my oldest is a cuddler, is very quiet, is very sensitive, very emotional. When something's going on, you need to talk very quietly with her. She's someone that you say, come snuggle with me on the couch. She needs that. Where my youngest is very spirited and needs more of a higher energy level with everything, whether it's excitement or, you know, she's doing something that maybe she shouldn't be doing that needs to be, you know, corrected or adjusted there. She needs a different energy level. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting to learn that you have to, or at least for me, it's made my job easier as a parent to learn to adjust my behavior for my individual children. Mm-hmm. As well. And that what you can't just blanket one size fits all with both of them. Have you found that as well?
Absolutely. And I think it's marvelous that you are so in tune with the unique spirit that each of your kids are. I have talked to so many parents who have said that kind of thing. Well, it's so easy with this one. Why is it so hard with that one? We're doing the same thing. Well, maybe you need to not do the same thing because they are different. And just like a fingerprint or a snowflake, you have to see them not for who it is you think they should be. You have to actually see them for who it is they are. And then once you actually see them for who they are, then you can approach them in the way you can figure out what works best for who they are, not who you're just imagining you're seeing. And I think that's a day of reckoning that comes to most parents. And, you know, I think that day of reckoning, it can be easier or it can be more dramatic for different parents. I mean, I'm thinking about parents of special needs kids, kids who get diagnosed with something after birth where they thought, or it could be even birth too. I mean, it could be at any stage, because as soon as you know you're having a baby, whether it's biological or one's coming to you through adoption or fostering, whatever, as soon as you know that child is on its way to you, you immediately start conceiving of ideas of what they will be like, what you will do with them, what their interests will be. And then more often than not, the child that arrives to you is vastly different from what you thought they would be. And so even, you know, something as small as a personality difference, that's a day of reckoning, all the way up to a serious diagnosis, having to come to terms with the fact that your child is different and will likely never, all those dreams and ideas you had will likely never come to be. But it's probably also true even with the neurotypical, healthy, physically healthy child, you had an idea of how they we're going to be, and they're not quite that way. And you have to come to terms with that. And as soon as you come to terms with who it is they are, then you can actually meet them where they are for who they are.
Yeah, I agree. And that reminds me of a story. So my Alexa was sent, I believe both my girls were sent to me for a reason, to teach me a lesson that I needed to learn. And my Alexa was definitely sent to me to learn to release control and not have to control everything. So I had a very horrible pregnancy with her. I had hyperemesis gravidum. So people don't know what that is. It's, you know, what the Kate Middleton has and many people have had, where you are violently ill and vomit a lot during pregnancy. So by the time I was full term, I was 30 pounds under my pre-pregnancy weight with her.
Oh my goodness.
I had almost lost her. I had a 54-hour natural delivery that was very challenging. And she had some medical issues. And I remember sitting on my bed with my midwife, and I think I was 3 days postpartum, and I was just sobbing and sobbing, and we were having breastfeeding issues. And it was just everything that I had envisioned in my head to go a certain way did not even come close to it. And she looked at me, and it's the best piece of advice I've gotten in my life. And she said to me, "Maria, this is Alexa's journey. This is Alexa's journey. Your job is to help her guide and navigate her on that journey for what she is destined to do and to live and to believe. You cannot control it. You cannot change it. And the more you fight to control and change it, the harder it's going to be." And I got angry at her when she said that to me, and I held that anger for a few years until I started to realize it, because we look at our children and we want what we think in our head is the best for them. Mm-hmm. And what we think in our head may not always be what is the best for them. And through a lot of personal development work and soul searching and trying to figure out what I wanted in my own life, I realized that sometimes what we think we want in our head isn't even the best that's out there for us. And we're all highly intuitive creatures, especially children. And, you know, I wanted to just take a step back and see what she wanted to do and how she wanted to do things and learn to, you know, release that control. And it's a battle I fight every single day. It's a choice every single day to say, I will not control this. That's not the choice that I would make. You know, she was an amazing gymnast when she was younger. She could have done amazing. She did. Her heart wasn't in it. It drove me mad, you know, but we found something else that she loved. And when you see the passion is there in their eyes, then you realize why it's so important to let go of that control. And it becomes easier in parenting, but I think there's a grieving process almost in letting that go, to letting see what unfolds for any parent of any child of any, you know, spectrum.
I love that advice your midwife gave you. I think it's so, so sage. And I can imagine why you reacted negatively to it, because I've actually come to the conclusion that I don't think there's actually any way to adequately prepare parents for parenting until they're actually just knee deep in it. You can say all you want, but it's just not going to sink in the same way as when the child is standing in front of you. So that's really interesting. I love her advice.
Yeah, that's good. That's good stuff. And I share it with as many people as I can. And, you know, and I tell them to, you know, the biggest piece of advice I always tell people is follow your intuition. If it feels good to you, what you're doing, it's probably right. If it doesn't feel good, especially with parenting, you know, I came from the Latina background. And that's kind of where I started learning where I wanted to do things differently, because my mom was a yeller and a, you know, hair puller, and I got spanked. And I remember thinking this, I think when I would raise my voice, I was like, this doesn't feel good to me, and it wouldn't work anyways. And I think I spanked my oldest once, and I literally turned around and vomited. I was so upset over it. And I realized, like, that's not for me. And so I learned, you know, to find other methods, that worked for me. What are you, with your daughter at 12 today, what are you starting to see are some of the biggest challenges that you're navigating with her growing up into the teenage years?
Well, with her, it's peers by far, by far. She's a very sensitive old soul. And I think she's mature well beyond her years. And so it's very, very hard for her to relate to the other girls in her school and in her grade and in at her age, because by and large, they have vastly different interests than her or just thoughts that run through their head. She has a really hard time meeting them. You know, you in order to make a connection to someone, you have to find some common interest, a common thing that you both know about, a common knowledge base, something that you can connect on. And it's so hard for her. It's painful for me sometimes to watch her struggle socially, because she's just that kind of kid. And there are so many kids like her, so many boys and girls both, who are sweet and sensitive and delicate and kind, and they don't have that thick outer skin, and they blossom in adulthood, but childhood can be so tough for them to navigate. So that's the biggest challenge for her. And she's really learning how to embrace who she is. She loves school. She works really hard at school. She's smart, so you know, she gets good grades, but she's very, very committed to her studies. She found out yesterday, for example, that she got a 99 on her paper that she had turned in. My mother-in-law was here, and she was trying to celebrate the 99 that my daughter announced that she got. But my daughter was unhappy. Well, why didn't I get 100? What did I do wrong? And then she found out that she not misspelled a word, but used a word whose, WHOSE instead of WHO'S. So she got a point off for that. So that's the kind of girl she is. You know, she demands a lot of herself. And I also have to work with her to not be a perfectionist. Mm-hmm. And so she knows that. But for her, like you were saying, control is a constant daily choice for you, or choosing not to be too controlling. Hers is a daily choice that she has to make, not to expect perfection out of herself.
Yeah. And it's funny because when you describe your daughter, you describe me as a child to the T. that child that wanted, that had all the good grades, and that I couldn't, I had a very hard time relating to my peers. And even to this day, most of my friends are 10, 15 years older than me. Mm. But I think what I found for me, what was critical, it was in my high school years, was that I found a extracurricular that I was really passionate about. I did, our high school had a sports medicine program. And that's where I fell in love with medicine, which was my first career. And it allowed me to work with physicians and to, you know, learn under them in a place of authority and leadership, which was so, I think, empowering for me. I didn't see it then. I see it now, looking back, as I look at my journey, as where I've progressed in life. And something that I believe is these days is that girls really need to have something that they're passionate about. Mm-hmm. In school is great, but something else that drives their spirit and their soul, whether it's something in the arts or computers or, sports, something extracurricular that they can turn to when the drama is going on with the friends, or, you know, the pressures of society, that help them stay focused. Has she found something that inspires her?
She's inspired daily. she can be inspired by a sunset, or the way the snow is falling out of the sky, or the deer that are walking in the woods, or anything. She particularly loves seals. That's her favorite animal. And she loves singing and music. She's in the band at her school. She's in the drama club at her school. So, you know, we try to encourage her to explore activities and really ask herself, does this speak to me? Does it excite me? Do I have great anticipation to go back again? Or am I kind of dreading it and going through the motions? So she's got quite a few things that really excite her. She loves to read. Now she's playing on the volleyball team. So she's got her hand in a bunch of different things. And I agree with you. It is very important to have that special thing or things mm-hmm. to go to when you just want to kind of get away from the rest of the craziness sometimes.
Yeah. I love that you ask her those questions, you know, when she's doing those activities. Does it call to you? Do you love it? Does it make your heart sing, or do you dread doing it? Because I think they're such good questions to ask and for them to gauge on what really inspires them. You know, I love the work that I do, and I always tell my girls, I want you to find a career, whatever it is you do, that makes you happy, and school should make you happy like that. And whatever sport or extracurricular you do should make you feel happy like that. And if it doesn't make you feel happy like that, then you don't have to do it anymore. Instead of pushing towards a constant, you have to stick to one thing. Especially at this age, there's so many opportunities out there for them to try so many different things, and teaching her to emotionally think about that to gauge, I think, is so important. I love that you make her think that way.
Thank you. I would have to say that it came from my older son. Somehow I was aware of that when he was a little boy. I watched the craziness that is youth sports, particularly among boys. It is like an alien life force at times. And I saw so many parents pushing their boys, pushing. Not only do they have to go to practice for their team, but then they have to get private coaching, and they have to get this, and they have to do extra, and they have to do reps at home, and oh my goodness. And then I started seeing these really talented boys quitting their sports when they're 10, 11 years old because they're so darn burned out, they can't even stand the idea of it anymore. And I said, oh no, we cannot go down like that. So I learned very young with him that I always wanted to ask him what he wanted to do. And when he was doing it, did he want to continue? And we had a particular experience with him only a few years ago. I think he was 13 at the time. And when he was young, with all of them, you know, we set that guideline of if you sign up for something, you have to see it through. Mm-hmm. And that's an important, I would say, beginner lesson that we want to teach our kids commitment. But then once that season is over, most seasons for little kids are 6 to 8 weeks, and then you can sign up for another one. So once that season is over, then you have to ask, do I want to sign up for another season, or am I done? And so that's an important thing to ask. But then it's important. He played baseball from age 4 to, well, he was 14. Well, age 15, actually, he's still 15. He decided at the end of last spring that he didn't want to play anymore because he's really interested in volleyball and he really wants to focus his time on that. And so he wants to stop. But 11 years he played. And 11 years, every year I said, do you want to sign up again? Do you want to sign up again? And before volleyball came into his life, baseball was it. Like, that was his main focus. So even knowing how much he loved it, even knowing how focused and committed he was, every year before I signed him up, okay, new year, new season, do you want to sign up? And so I think it's important. You never know what is going on inside of their heads until you ask. And then also by asking those questions, you're teaching them to be introspective themselves, because when they're adults, they may have a job that they don't like. Mm-hmm. But if they never ask that question, how are they ever going to know if it's time to move on?
Thank you so much, Erin. I love to hear about how you as a professional navigate the journey of raising a powerful girl with your own daughter, and for all of the tips and insight that you've shared today. To find out more about Erin, you can find her at www.erin-taylor.com. To hear the rest of this interview as we further explore this topic, please join our community at raisingapowerfulgirl.com. We look forward to seeing you there.
You are a leader and a role model to developing girls. Whether you're raising a daughter or you work with girls on a daily basis, you see the incredible potential they have to make a difference in this world. You know the change we need is going to come from them, and you want to make sure they grow up to be independent leaders with a strong sense of personal identity, because these are the traits that make a powerful girl. So come join our community and education platform at raisingapowerfulgirl.com and become a part of our movement to educate, inspire, and cultivate a generation of powerful girls with eye-opening discussions and facts, exercises, and tangible calls to action. We can't wait to see you there.
Have you ever asked yourself this question? Why is it so hard to make a buck? I know I have. Hi, I'm Sandra Yancey, founder and CEO of eWomen Network. What I have discovered after going from the brink of bankruptcy to running a multi-million dollar award-winning business is this. You can't build a million-dollar dream hanging around minimum wage mindsets. My mission is 1 million women entrepreneurs generating $1 million in annual revenue. So here's what I've done. I've created the mother of all entrepreneur success programs that you can access online on your time. It's called Monetize Me Now. It's a 7-module online course that is 100% my success formula, covering mindset, mission, management, motivation, marketing, and measure. Come on, take my hand and I'll show you the way to learn to earn flowing revenue for your business. Visit monetizemenow.com for details. Thanks for joining us. This is the EWN Podcast Network.